I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Barry Link joins me now. He was editor of the Vancouver Courier newspaper from 2009 to just this past spring. He remains with Glacier Media, and I'll ask him about his current role with the company. I hear it has something to do with starting up podcasts. He was assistant editor at the Courier from 2004 to 2008 and was editor of the Vancouver Echo at one point, a reporter with the Richmond News and the Medicine Hat News. In 2012, he received a Jack Webster Foundation Fellowship. He's a graduate of the University of Victoria, as well as Langara College, where he also teaches now. And he is the author of Zombie Town USA. I'll ask Mr. Link about current affairs like this federal election campaign that we're in the midst of, as well as journalism. He teaches journalism, and he works in it. So it'll be interesting to get a sense of how newspapers are faring nowadays. This week, Glacier Media announced that three community papers, the Tri-Cities Now, the Burnaby News Leader, and the New Westminster News Leader, will be shut down. It's been a year of bloodletting at all sorts of media outlets in this part of the world, whether broadcast or print. Please welcome to the Plant Online program in person, Barry Link. Mr. Link, good morning.
Good morning to you, and you seem to know my biography better than I do.
That's LinkedIn, I guess, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
So it's always a bummer when newspapers fold, and you're not here in your capacity. You're not speaking on behalf of Glacier when I ask you this, but it can't be a good thing when newspapers fold like this, when they close down, and especially ones that have been part of the community for so long.
Yeah, no, it isn't. It isn't a fun moment at all. We're going through a period where we're trying to figure out how we're going to continue to do this kind of business. And there's some hard decisions that are going to be made that, you know, 10 years from now we'll know if those were the right decisions or not. But everywhere, as you said, this is a really tough time for journalism. And it's all on how we're going to pay for this. You know, I believe, and I think most journalists believe, and I think most news consumers believe, that there still is a demand for what we do. People still want to find out, you know, what the government is doing, what's going on in their community. They still want stories. They still want information. I think that hunger remains. But what, you know, we're trying to figure out on the business side is how this remains a business.
Has it changed because of technology? Has it changed because of people's habits in consuming newspapers, thus there's not the market for advertisers, and that's why they're not advertising in the Sun or the Courier, for that matter?
Yeah, I think it's changed for all kinds of reasons, and obviously technology would be one of those. And, you know, I'm one of those people that's helped bring that change about by being a champion of this new technology, including in my own habits. The vast majority of the news that I consume is online, you know, done for the most part by old school traditional journalists, because I trust them as news sources and I want to find out, you know, information from them. But I've moved to this sort of digital sphere, and it's that digital sphere that we're still trying to figure out the money part of.
Because the sense that I get when we hear newspaper proprietors in the news and the sort is that's our fault, that it's the reader's fault, because we're not paying for this stuff online, and we're not subscribing. First of all, we're not subscribing to the newspapers for delivery. Then we go online, and we're not paying for it there. One of the newspaper chains, I mean, they're not profitable because they're servicing debt all the time. You know, every quarterly report, that's what we hear. And then the burden is, I guess, placed on us, the consumer, us the news consumer.
I'm not sure that that's really a fair... I'm not sure that we can blame the consumer for this. People are going to move where they move in terms of where they want information. We can't force people to, you know, still gather around an old-time radio and listen to radio dramas, for example. People moved on a long time ago. This is a business, and as journalists, we have to move where the audience is going. We have to keep up with them, if not lead. And I think our problem has been that we've been behind, with you know, a few exceptions. So where is a lot of the activity right now among where people are engaging with one another and talking with one another? Well, it's in social media, online. It is a real challenge as journalists trying to figure out how to still maintain the sort of rigorous standards of information that we present to people in these new formats, but we have to figure it out. I think that we as and I'll stick to the journalist side as opposed to the business side because I know more about that. But I think that we did not keep up enough. I don't think that we were seeing far enough into the future.
And so, but at the end of the day, the consumer does suffer. I mean, the Vancouver Sun is a shadow of it once of what it once was. The Courier is now down to one day a week. As I mentioned in the introduction, there's bloodletting at all sorts of broadcast outlets and the sort. So at the end of the day, the consumer is losing out. Will they come back?
That remains an open question, yeah. to be quite honest. But as I started out, I think there's still a hunger for this. They'll find a new source for what they're looking for, and we're in this kind of crazy transition moment, as I said, where people are looking at all kinds of sources of information for the news that they want. But again, I come back to the idea that if you still present good, solid information that people really want, I think that they'll flock to that.
Yeah, and you mentioned earlier that people aren't listening to old-time dramas, but they're listening to podcasts like Serial.
Yep.
I mean, that was a huge phenomenon last year. So, I mean, there is a hunger, I guess, for long-form presentation. It's just yep. that you folks in the traditional media, if you will, just haven't caught up. And I guess, is that one of the things that you're going to do at Glacier now?
Well, we're starting a podcast initiative, and we're still in the early stages of our project. So, but by its very nature, podcasts are more of a long-form medium. I mean, they're the exact opposite of something like Instagram or Twitter, which are immediate and of course, very brief lives and meant to be kind of a fun, small thing. Or in some cases, it can be very emotionally compelling, but still a short hit. Whereas in podcasts, by their very nature, such as the program that you do, you're ideally at least 20 minutes or 30 minutes of discussion or audio of some kind, and that by its very nature is longer than most of what we see online, compared to YouTube, for example. So yeah, by its very nature, that's what we'll be jumping into.
Yeah, and can you give us an insight as to what that might be?
You mean a kinds of shows?
Yeah.
We'll have a tech-focused show. We're going to have one from the perspective of the homeowner. We'll do one lifestyles show and sports and business. Our hope is to have about five shows producing one episode per week by this time next year.
And so I guess that'll work in concert with the properties that Glacier has in this market, the
yep.
newspapers like
yep.
the Courier, the West Ender, etc.
Yep.
In terms of the Courier, because you were there for a number of years.
Yeah.
It's a paper that we all read in this town. We all get it, at our homes and the sort. The decision to go to one day a week, was that... you were the editor of the paper. What was the rationale behind that?
It actually occurred after I stopped being the editor, so I can't speak exactly to what the reasons were. But if you go to one a week, once a week, or if you are once a week, you go to twice a week, you're doing it because you think you can capture the most amount of business that way. So the that kind of decision, which is not something you take lightly. And that would include, moving your publication day in some cases. Some weeklies might want to change from one day to the next. It's all about two things. One is how can you capture the most business? And secondly, what's the best day for presenting the information that you have?
And one of the things that I heard when this all happened was that it was so that the website is daily.
That's correct.
So, if you want news, say on Vancouver, or you want to know what happened at the Parks Board on Tuesday night or whatever, you can go to the website and you can read the reports there. They're live nearly.
Yeah.
So, have you found that the website has done well in terms of being the source for local news in this town at least?
Yes, but it depends on the kind of local news. Vancouver's a really hard market. To operate as any kind of news entity because it is the most crowded market in BC, actually Western Canada. Being a community paper like the Courier in a market like Vancouver is much different than being a community paper in a small suburban market or small town market. Because you have so much more competition. In Vancouver, you've got competition from the large established media, such as the dailies and broadcast, but also you've got a high concentration of online bloggers and strictly online entities. So, you know, Vancouver is a place to be if you're in media, so that makes it a real challenge.
And so have you found, I mean, you're no longer the editor of the Courier, but talking about community papers like that, because as I mentioned off the top, there have been three in the area in Metro Vancouver here that have been shuttered in the last, they'll be closed, I guess, in October, but news came this week. Can the community paper, can that remain relevant? I mean, you have the commuter papers now, you still have the dailies, the broadsheets, and the tabloid. And of course, radio and TV. Does the weekly community paper, does that still have a place?
Yeah, I think so. Someone has to cover City Hall with commitment and regularity. Someone has to cover school board and park board, and someone has to dig into what's going on in the neighborhoods. And you know, especially in this area, no one has done it like the community papers have done it. You know, whether it's in Richmond or in Coquitlam or even in Vancouver, you know, as I said, it's much more difficult to do that. But we still were able to find a niche for ourselves as a paper, in the Vancouver news environment.
You teach at Langara. That's part time.
Yeah, and I'm just there for this term. I'm a temp hire. Yeah.
What are you teaching, by the way?
I'm teaching copy editing.
When you look at your class, and I'm assuming it's young people, mainly young people?
For the most part, yeah.
Yeah. Do you ever ask them what draws them to journalism in such uncertain times?
Yeah, it's actually a question that I've asked every intern that's come through our doors in the past 5-10 years. You know, because the industry is in, you know, as we just said, is a very difficult position at this point, or if you want to look at more broadly, a transition phase. And, more out of curiosity than any kind of, condemnation. And so you do ask them, and the answers are really refreshing. They still believe in journalism. They want to dig up stories. They want to tell stories. Probably what's happened is that the state of the industry has weeded out the sort of merely curious. So the ones that are coming through, you know, the ones that are in journalism school now, the interns that are coming through, they're really committed because they've had to make some hard choices.
And, you know, so if there are people that are interested in journalism who feel that it has a place in the discourse, in the future, you're a journalist, and you obviously that's your work, and you obviously want the journalism to survive, and there is a desire on the part of the media consumer. What's the part that the proprietors play?
You mean the people who own the
presses, who own the stations, who own the media that we all consume.
I don't quite understand the question, so what's their...
Yeah, I mean, have you found that I mean, we always hear that the proprietors use the media because they there are certain proprietors who have used it for political purposes because they have an agenda to further.
Right.
Some have used it to make profit because, you know, you hear of the old days at the Sun in the 80s and the 70s about how it was just printing money. There's not as much money to be made nowadays, so should there be proprietors that invest in media today rather than, say, sell them off and fold up shop?
Well, you know, again, fundamentally it's a business, so the proprietors, the ownership, have to do their part to make it viable. And especially if they're a publicly traded company, they've got shareholders, which, could include, you and me through pension funds and that sort of thing. So, you can't really blame companies for making hard decisions if they're not making money, because they're not charities; they are for-profit ventures. what we could be moving toward in journalism is more more variety in the kind of financing models that we have. So, for example, in the online sphere, we're seeing that with more direct reader or audience funding of the
crowdfunding,
programs.
Yeah.
Crowdfunding, exactly. We're also maybe seeing more of a patron model, even at a deeper level. So it's almost like we need angel investors who have a significant amount of money and just really want to do something. I mean, a long time ago, a lot of the daily newspapers, for example, were owned by families of wealth. Mm-hmm. And they owned newspapers, you know, they ran them as businesses, but almost as much as their sense of public good. And of course, it depended what their vision of public good was. But they had a sense that almost it was a duty to do this. And at the risk of, you know, all media being owned just by really wealthy people who want to use it as a hobby, that might also be part of the solution, which you need almost like a non-profit model in a sense. So I think the future is going to be a mix. I mean, we're still going to have journalists, you know, working for businesses, and they've got to be viable. They've got to make money because efforts and projects have to pay for themselves. But we also might see more direct crowdfunding, which will get more and more sophisticated as the tools get more sophisticated, and perhaps kind of a patronage system.
Yeah, it's uncertain times for sure. But you do see hope at the end of the tunnel, if you will?
Yeah, I do. And again, I come back to the demand. If demand ever ceases, then, you know, let's give up. Let's go home and play Call of Duty. whereas I don't see that happening. I especially when you're working at a paper like The Courier, you do see the demand every day, you know, from people phoning, from people emailing. They want to know what's happening with that major development down the street. They want to know what that issue is that city council is talking about. And they want to know what the controversy is at the school that their children are going to. Those are needs that people still have, and I don't see that need going away. So it's a matter of, you know, doing what we've always done. The tools are changing in journalism, demographics are changing, but, you know, the fundamentals are not changing. You still have to do the hard work to research and find a story and tell that story in a way that is compelling for people.
So we're also in the midst of a federal election campaign, and you're obviously observing that, as we all are. It can get boring because it's such a long campaign, but nonetheless, it's around us. As someone who is a journalist who has news sense, are there stories that we're missing, say, in the coverage that we're seeing of this campaign?
That's a good question because, you know, like a lot of people, I've been kind of unexcited about this election, and especially because it occurred during the summer. Or started during the summer, and also at a time when I was just really busy with other things. So, as a lot of people are in the summer, the length has contributed to that as much as anything else. If it was 5 or 6 weeks, we would have compressed our expectations of it quite a bit, and the campaigns would have been, I think, more focused than they have been. Up until this week, I think one of the things that I've been lacking was just good look at the leaders. We finally got that this week when the CBC did those interviews. Yeah, those actually, I'm still catching up to all of the interviews, but you know, at least it was a good look. At least it was one-on-one. They were able to talk away from all the management of the campaigns. One of the biggest problems that journalists face right now, and one by extension, one of the biggest problems that regular citizens in consuming news face, is that we're in the great age of control. We're in the great age of management of the message. Governments, corporations, nonprofits, even sometimes community groups and individuals all want to stay on message. There's a lack of authenticity in the answers that people give when you ask them questions. So, I mean, in Vancouver, we saw that it happened in City Hall over the past term. even before that, where they closed the doors significantly on the efforts of journalists to get questions, just basic questions, non-political questions, to a ridiculous extent. And it's that management of the message which I think is still playing out in this campaign, where every day, my inbox is flooded with emails from the various parties about so-and-so is going to be here, and here's the message he's going to be relaying. And it's this effort to try and stay on message, and then trying to keep journalists to adhere to that message. And, there's a lot of working journalists in this country, a lot of working journalists in this city who are doing their best, but they're doing more things than ever before because they're trying to get their messages, or they're trying to get their stories out on multiple platforms. So if we're lacking something, perhaps it might be some enterprise reporting, more digging in terms of looking behind a deeper level at the promises that the parties are making.
So do you feel that we are well served by the media we have, and not just talking about politics, but in general in this town, in this market, because it's a very, as you said, a very competitive market. If we're not well served by the media, should then proprietors throw more bodies at it?
We could always use more bodies. Journalism really is an area where it's boots on the ground. And I can't speak to what various organizations are doing in terms of assigning reporters or journalists or resources to this campaign. But the more the better. And are we being served? In some ways, yes, in some ways, no. With the closures of some newspapers, with the loss of jobs that we've been seeing, then that's a loss of voices. There's no way to sugarcoat that. There's no other way around that. Will we see the growth to replace that on the digital side? Maybe, but I think that there has to be some maturing of some of the skills on the journalism or on the digital side.
Vancouver, is one of those rare places in this province, well, in the country for that matter, where it'll really be a three-way race in a lot of these ridings, won't it?
That's what I'm told, yeah.
Yeah. Your sense of it, I'm not going to ask you for a prediction because it's predictable.
Yeah.
How do you think it'll play out? And in terms of, do you see it as a three-way race? This riding, where we're sitting in at the moment, Vancouver Kingsway, looks like it'll be a safe NDP. Well, it's always been a safe NDP seat for Mr. Davies.
Yeah.
But other ridings, like those new ones, like Vancouver Granville.
Yeah,
Vancouver,
which is the riding that I'm in.
Yeah.
From what I understand from the polling, and I haven't seen anything recent, but I think it's considered a three-way race. But, of course, when we say three-way race, it really depends where people want to put their vote and what their objectives are. If you want to vote by party versus if you are a strategic voter, that's going to affect the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot's going to depend on, how many more weeks do we have? 5 weeks? 6 weeks?
Something like that. But it's, I think, 5 weeks, yeah.
Yeah. That actually is the length almost of a traditional campaign. So it's almost like we're in the second phase of a campaign, or almost a whole new campaign.
Yeah.
And now, of course, the story of the week has been that the Conservatives may or may not be on the ropes in terms of their declining popularity and their campaign, going a bit adrift. Whether or not that's true, it almost doesn't matter because there's still 5 weeks. Anything can happen, and that just is, it's a cliche, but it's so true. It just takes one slip by one of the major party leaders at some event, which is why, of course, they want to manage the message so much, but it just takes one slip up, and that could have a huge effect on what the outcome is.
The Conservatives haven't really done very well in Vancouver, so they are competitive, but I mean, even at this point,
with the exception of South Van, where they've got a strong conservative base that they did really well on delivering in the last election.
Yeah, but even then, the margin that she won was still quite...
It was slim,
yeah.
But it was still a good victory on their part.
Yeah. So that's one seat out of, I don't know how many seats are in Vancouver actually, but anyway, so it's one seat. Do you think it'll be status quo in terms of the numbers, say, the number of Liberals, NDP, and Conservatives in Vancouver itself?
Man, I couldn't tell you, and especially with the realignment of the ridings, I'd have to look at the map and try and figure that out. And, you know, these kinds of predictions is not my strong suit to begin with, because it involves math, and I'm a journalist. Come on.
You're not Chad Skelton.
No. Actually, Chad Skelton would be an excellent person to ask about this kind of stuff.
He's leaving the Sun, apparently, from what I understand this morning.
That's what I understand as well. I hope Chad finds a new home. He's a really skilled, smart guy, and I'm sure he will.
He's also teaching, I guess. That's one of the reasons that he's leaving.
Yeah. Yeah, that's my understanding as well, and his students are lucky to have him.
You've got a pretty good department at Langara where you teach.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, there's a lot of people there. I mean, Frances Beulah is the chair, isn't she?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah. When you look at Vancouver, I mean, when you walked in here, you were telling me that you weren't born in Vancouver. You lived elsewhere.
Yeah.
You were born and raised elsewhere and then came here. What's kept you here? I mean, we all complain about how expensive the damn place is, but yet a lot of us stay here. Why for you?
Days like this is one of them where we get sucked in. I mean, it's beautiful sunshine outside and it's September. You know, of course, we did have this extraordinarily dry, hot summer, but, you know, the default for Vancouver is rain and a little bit cold. But it just takes the sun to shine in a particular day, and you look out across False Creek and to the North Shore Mountains, and you're just suckered in. I mean, that might sound really simple, but that's a big part of the appeal of living here. It's hard to have that same experience in Winnipeg or Saskatoon, especially in February. The other thing is, you know, I built a career here, and I built a life here. It's an interesting part of the world, and I think we're in a lucky part of the world for so many reasons. You just have to look at what's going on internationally, you know, with the conflict in Syria, for example. I mean, we're so far removed from that kind of reality here in Vancouver. We have our own problems, obviously, but we're so far removed from that kind of stuff, and it's been a long time since anything like that has happened. Nothing like that has happened here. It's, you know, we are really lucky. It is expensive, and that is the dialogue, I think, that's emerging in Vancouver right now, is it worth it? Is it worth the money? And we're at that stage where that's no longer a black and white question. I think even 10 years ago, people would have said, sure, it's still worth the money. It's more expensive in Montreal. It's more expensive than even perhaps Toronto. But, you know, again, the sun shines and we all just melt. Yeah. Whereas now it's a bit more of an open question.
And having worked at the Courier for many years, I mean, the municipal political coverage is just top-notch and excellent. Looking at how City Hall is covered, I mean, you've talked of the challenges a moment ago about, say, message control. I mean, we've seen that with this current government.
Yeah, absolutely.
At Cambie and 12th. How does that change? As a journalist, you'd probably say open all the doors and let us in, but I mean, that's not going to happen. So how do you work around those challenges and perhaps force change in terms of how you get access to people that you need to talk to?
That's a really good question. I mean, the coverage that we've done at the Courier really comes down to just having excellent staff, like excellent writers, people who just know their job and dig deep and have gained huge respect for that. I'm just lucky that I was along for the ride to work with those kinds of people. You know, since City Hall did close the doors and clamp down on access, we have complained privately and sometimes a little less privately, and we have put pressure on City Hall and their communications department, and we've been pretty open about that. You know, they have loosened it a little bit. I'll give them that. So they have adjusted their policy somewhat, but it's still pretty much the same philosophy. You know, I don't see that changing because it's everywhere. When I was working in Alberta in the 90s, I saw it with the Klein government. When I returned to BC, I saw it happen to the provincial government here. And then it came down to the city level. So it's no surprise. It's, like I said, this is the great age or not so great age of information message control and management. And that habit of mind has a firm grasp on the institutions that run our lives. I don't see that changing anytime soon. So, you know, how we do that as journalists, we just the work that we do all along, we search all the documents we can, we try and get people to talk on or off the record as much as we can, and we just keep asking questions, and we keep putting those questions in front of the public for them to know that we're asking those kinds of questions.
And have you got a date for when Glacier Media's podcasts begin?
I hesitate to put one out there because we're still, like I said, we're still in the pre-production phase, but this month we hope to get our first podcast out the door.
Well, we'll be listening for sure. And it's been a pleasure meeting you.
Same here.
I've admired your work at The Courier and, of course, followed you on Twitter over the last number of years or so. So I appreciate you coming in here to do this.
My pleasure to be here as well.
Barry Link joined me in person here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Planta.